Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 8, Text 28. Manye Twam Kalam Ishanam Anadinidhanam Bibum Samam Charantam Sarvatra Bhutanam Yatmita Kali. Manye Twam Kalam Ishanam. Manye Twam Kalam Ishanam. Anadi Nidanam Bibum. Anadi Nidanam Bibum. Samam Charantam Sarvatra. Samam charantam sarvatra. Bhutanam yanmita kali. Bhutanam yanmita kali. Manye twam kalamishanam. Anadi nidanam bibum. Samam charantam sarvatra. Bhutanam yanmita kali. Consider Twam, your lordship, Kalam, the eternal time, Ishanam, the supreme lord, Anadi Nidanam, without beginning and end, Vibhum, all pervading, Samam, equally merciful, Charantam, distributing, Sarvatra, everywhere. Bhutanam, of the living beings. Yatmitaha, by intercourse. Kali, dissension. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, I consider Your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing Your mercy, You are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. Purport. Kunti Devi knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, Paramatma. Another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, eternal time. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and the resultant reactions are destined by Him. It is no use saying that we do not know why or for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore He knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, He is the supreme controller also. Without His sanction, not a blade of grass can move. The living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries destined by eternal Kala. The Kala offers the conditioned soul both happiness and miseries. It is all predestined by eternal time. As we have miseries uncalled for, so we have happiness also without being asked, for they are all predestined by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the result of his own destiny. This destiny is made by living beings in the course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and he therefore can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, He is known as the eternal time Kala. Om Gnati Manam Dasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadatikam. So, this is a picture of my mother and this is a picture of my father. From probably way back, you know, just around the time when they were met each other. So both of them are no longer with us. My mom passed away on Friday. I'm sorry, I prepared a class that's going to be difficult for me to give, but I'm going to try my best here. And my father about 3.5 years ago. So what went wrong? Nothing. That's time past, eternal time. As Kunti is saying here in the translation, Krishna's eternal time, Kala, time passes. And that's what happens. That's what happens to everybody. You know, could it have been avoided? No. Doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that. If you go across the street, if you go up into Mother Krota Shamini's yoga studio, you could see a picture there of our Hatha yoga teacher. Hatha Yoga Guru, BKS Iyengar. There's a picture of him on his 80th birthday. And he's got his leg. He's grabbing his leg from behind him and he's got it up on his head or something like that. Some incredibly difficult position to be in. And that was on his 80th birthday. So, you know, you can understand from that this was a man who was like in an incredibly good physical condition. 80 years old, he's doing that. But, he passed away. He passed away when he was 94. not that old. I mean, old. But, Jack LaLanne. How many have heard of Jack LaLanne? Probably, you know, the older members of the community. He was one of the, perhaps the, you know, the first health, big health guru. He had a television show that ran for like 30 years where he was, you know, kind of inspiring people to do exercise. And he was an example himself. He was working out and he was healthy until he was 96 years old. But he passed away when he was 96 years old. So, you know, I'm thinking somebody, I might have been thinking, well, if my parents lived healthier, perhaps they could have lived longer. Maybe, but, you know, here's these two people who are super healthy. BKS Iyengar and Jack LaLanne, they were super healthy. Probably they enjoyed a better quality of life than my parents did because, you know, they kind of suffered in the last 10, 15, 20 years. Was kind of, you know, things, quality of life was deteriorating. Whereas with these gentlemen, probably they had a pretty good quality of life, pretty close up until the end. Although, if you look at pictures of both of them, the body deteriorates. You see, so I looked at pictures, and if you Google it, there's this thing where you can get the pictures. And I saw pictures of Jack LaLanne. Amla Bhakti Maharaj would well remember Jack LaLanne. He's from, more from his era. Don't remind you. All right. But, you know, he was quite, even like up until 70, he was quite muscular and robust. But after that, you know, you see pictures of him in his 80s and 90s. And there's one of him in a swimming pool, and he looks like an old man. I mean, he was active and everything. He's working out, but he did also look like an old man. And as I said, he passed away when he was 96. So it's you know, it's not by being healthier that you necessarily are going to get to live longer. Well, what if they had been like, you know, real devotees? I mean, they both kind of, you know, they chanted Hare Krishna. They took prasadam. What if they had been real devotees? Well, Vidura and Manjari were real devotees. They both, you know, passed away. They lived to 94 and a half and to Vidura till 90-something. So that's not the solution. What about if somebody's a yogi? You know, I've heard Prabhupada say on lectures that there are some yogis that come to the Kumbh Mela, and he said some of them are 300, 400, 700 years old. You know? So that's pretty good. You know, they lived 300, 400, 700 years, but yeah, like that's it. But then after 300, 400, 700 years, they also die. So that's not the solution either. You just, okay, they live longer, but they also die. And what about if we're thinking, well, you know, I'll just be really Krishna conscious and I'll just go from this lifetime and just be, you know, right back with Krishna. That's proper. We heard it last past Sunday. The devotee closes his eyes and, you know, when he opens his eyes, the next moment he's with Krishna in the spiritual world. And I'm sure that's true, you know, but I just wanted to point out to everybody that it's definitely what the program, but it might not happen as nicely and as easily and as comfortably as how Papa made it sound on Sunday. It's, you know, it's kind of like a, can be, and for most people it is a kind of a gruesome process. I mean, Prabhupada, his passing was very transcendental, like everything else about Prabhupada. You know, it was very transcendental. What's happened these last couple of weeks has given me further insight into how transcendental Prabhupada's passing was as well. And a lot of devotees wouldn't know that because we're not very knowledgeable of, you know, what happens to people when they're approaching that very final stage of life. Prabhupada was, you know, he was, what's the word? He was in bed and everything like that, but he was conscious. He was dictating purports up until, I don't know exactly, it was the last days. Definitely the last days, but I don't know how actual close to the actual time. But you know, they have a video. I mean, there's actually a video you could watch of Prabhupada passing, and you know, it shows him like right up at the end there. He was able to go Hare Krishna. So he was conscious. I mean, he wasn't speaking. You know, he wasn't sitting up and dictating purports and all of a sudden like that. No, you know, there was a gradual decline there, but he was present, you know, and up until pretty much the last breath. I mean, he was able to go, Hare Krishna, like that. But I just wanted to point out that that's, you know, it's not the case in general, or it can be for devotees. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of devotees pass, but in preparation for what happened to my mother this last week, when we realized, you know, she was coming to the very final stages, my son texted me something he found on the internet which described, you know, what happens to people in that final stage. Because, and I mean, they have some knowledge of it. They're seeing it happen again and again and again and again. And so he sent me this article, and I read the article, and it described in the article how, you know, people who are coming into that final stage who are going to be, looks like they're going to be dying from natural causes like that, just running out of gas kind of thing. What happens is, first thing is, well, the body shuts down. And the first thing is they, you know, lose their appetite because, you know, the body's, it's, I don't know, what comes first. They're getting a signal that, okay, well, you know, no longer necessary to eat a lot of food because we're not going to be closing up shop here. So, you know, the appetite goes, and my mom stopped eating solid food, and she, you know, just like right on, she was a textbook case. She stopped eating solid food, and then, you know, about a week or two later, she was just on liquid food, and then that went on for about a week or two, and then she kind of didn't want the liquid food, and then, you know, because the system's shutting down. The way it described it in this article, it was like, it's like if you're going to move out of a house. You know, before you go, you want to clean your house. So you go into a room and you clean up that room, and then when you finish cleaning up that room, you go, you leave the room, you shut the door, and that's it. Done with that room. That room's finished. You know, you move on to the next room and the next one. So it's describing, you know, making an analogy in that article that it's like that. That's the first system that gets shut down, and you know, as I said, kind of witnessed that. Yeah, and then it said the next system that got shut down is the person, you know, their interaction, because it said, it made the point, it takes a lot of energy for a person to, you know, listen and think about what the, you know, other people are saying, and you know, what's the word, process it, what, assimilate, yeah. Assimilate, process what they're saying, and then even and think about how to respond. And, you know, takes a lot. So that system starts, the person starts withdrawing and being less present. And same thing, that's exactly what we experienced. And then it said that, but, you know, be careful because the hearing is one of the last things that goes. The people are hearing. So be very careful about what you say in the presence of your, you know, loved one who's passing away, because, you know, you don't want to say anything wrong because they hear it. And sometimes it's even been very embarrassing situations where people respond. You know, they'll just be very, it's good. And then he'll hear something. It could be very embarrassing. But so that's another thing. But then that goes. And then the last thing they said was the heart and the lungs. The heart and the lungs are the last thing to give out. So my point is this, that, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, it talks, Krishna says, anybody who remembers me at the time of death, you know, when they're quitting their body, they at once attain my nature. This there is no doubt. And he goes on to say, next verse, that, you know, whatever one remembers at the time of death, to that state they will attain without fail. So my point is that, you know, don't take it for granted that you're going to be able to remember anything at the time of death. You know, we're thinking that, oh yeah, just, you know, we might have some like unrealistic idea of what the whole thing is. And as I said, not everybody's going to be able to pass away like Prabhupada passed away. It was a very transcendental passing. I mean, a lot of us might experience something similar to what I just described. Whereas, you know, it happens over a period of time, and you know, you stop eating, and then you stop. my mom went into like a state of semi-consciousness. As I said, she was, you know, for instance, Monday, she was able to, I said, Mom, can you give me one last Hare Krishna just for good luck? And she went, Hare Krishna. But on Wednesday, when the caregiver came and, you know, she asked her, and she went like, Hare, and that was it. She couldn't say anymore. And then after that, I could understand that, you know, we couldn't communicate. She was, you know, the person just is less present. The consciousness is not there. And exactly what there... Anyway, so the point is, you might not be remembering anything. I don't know. I know when I play Prabhupada lectures before I go to sleep. I put them on and I let it play all night. But I can't remember anything that Prabhupada said from when I'm sleeping. You know, we might not be able to remember. You know, you were thinking, like, I'll remember Krishna. But you might not be able to remember. I mean, physically, you might be in a condition where you can't remember. So what I was going to suggest is that, you know, we should try to remember. I'm not saying, well, forget about it because you're not going to be able to remember, so forget about trying to remember Krishna. No, we have to endeavor as much as we can to remember Krishna, but we should also, in addition to that, try to be remembered by Krishna. You know, Prabhupada used to quote his spiritual masters as having said, don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that God sees you. And, you know, try to, like, expand upon that and make an analogy out of that, or expand upon that idea that try to remember Krishna. You know, try to remember Krishna, but even more important that I would say is try to act in such a way or live your life in such a way that Krishna remembers you. Because we may not be able to remember Krishna. I mean, physically, you might not be able to remember Krishna, but try to act in such a way that Krishna remembers you. You know, demonstrate throughout our lifetimes, you know, by sincerely engaging in devotional service, what our desire is, where we want to go. And, you know, that's an important point. And another point was that something I was, you know, learning from all this is, we all have death facing us. You know, getting back to the point here, even if you're a yogi that lives for 300, 400, 700 years, or even if you're thinking, I'll become Lord Brahma. I mean, I haven't read anywhere in the scriptures that you don't die before you become Lord Brahma. All of us, we're looking at death. You're going to die. If somebody in this room is going to come back and be the next Lord Brahma, you're going to have to die first. So we're looking at death. It's staring us right in the face. So what are we going to do about it? I was thinking, what are the options? You know, what determines how a person responds to the inevitability of death? And the answer I came up with is, it's what determines that is what you think is going to happen after you die. That's what determines how you're going to live your life. What determines how you're going to live your life is determined by what you think is going to happen after you die. And I'll explain. Say you think that after you die, that's it. It's all over. Right? So how are you going to live your life? You're just going to try to make the most of it. Because, you know, Prabhupada said, self-preservation is the first law of nature. So everybody's acting. It's just the nature of the living entity. He's acting out of self-interest. He's trying to get the most bang for his buck. Every living entity is just trying to get the most out of life, the most enjoyment, the most this satisfaction. So if you're thinking, if that's your conviction that when you die it's all over, then you're going to just try to live right in the present. And according to your nature, you might do that in a way that, you know, helps other people or hurts other people, whatever. But that's what you're going to do. You're not going to try very hard to become a Christian. And you know, because you don't believe in that. You don't believe that you're either going to go to heaven or hell. You don't think there is a heaven or hell, so you're not going to try very hard for that. And you're not going to try to be a Hare Krishna devotee and get out of the cycle of birth and death because you don't believe in that. So what you believe in, you know, what you believe is going to happen after you die is what's going to determine how you live in this lifetime. So, and that's a big, that's why we're here, because we believe that after we die, the soul will go on. And it'll go on to either another material body, or it'll go back to be with Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. And, you know, because we believe that, that's what's determining our actions now. And I think it's a very, you know, I think about this a lot. I do this thing with myself where I go, okay, Bhrigu, let's have an honesty hour, or an honesty. I call it the honesty hour. And I just say to myself, okay, look, okay, now forget about what it says in the books. Forget about what Prabhupada, you've heard Prabhupada say on the lectures for the moment, just for the time being, you know. Forget about what you hear all the devotees say when they're talking to each other, okay? And just, you tell me, so where are you at? What do you actually believe? You know, let me hear where you're really at, what you really believe in. And I just ask myself, you know, like a reality check kind of thing. So when I do that, one thing that comes back for me is I go, well, you know, okay, talking to myself. I'm allowed to do that because I'm crazy, okay? They say crazy people, you know, talk to themselves, so I'm crazy, I'll admit it, and so therefore I have the right to do that. So in this dialogue, I come back and say, okay, well, you know, what Prabhupada says makes a lot of sense. I've got to admit, what Prabhupada, the different arguments and all the different ways, I mean, the hundreds or dozens of different ways Prabhupada kind of tries to explain how we're not the body, that does make a lot of sense. And, you know, I've done, in conjunction with that, and out of my own interest, I've read a bunch of these books and watched videos about, you know, children remember their past lives. I've studied the subject of reincarnation out, you know, from the academic world and everything. And it's also, I find that stuff very convincing. And I know there's people who could be skeptical still, but I'm not. I feel it when I read it, I go, wow, I'm convinced that that's actually, this is a description of a kid who's remembering a past life. So that's there. And then in addition to that, I've, you know, had like some good experiences in Krishna consciousness, and, you know, higher taste for chanting, and, you know, times when I feel like Krishna was using me as an instrument to distribute books and things like that. So the combination of all those things, and I've come to the, at least for me, I come, well, yeah, this is very reasonable. You know, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manakshastanani Indidhyani Prakriti Stani Karshati, I think he's just hit it right on the head. He says these living entities are my eternal fragmental parts and parcels, right? They're struggling hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Due to conditioned life, they're struggling hard. When I read that verse, and Vyudhakarma, I know he's very fond of that verse too, you know, that is like a Weltanschauung, you know, it's kind of like a world view, and that's the world view that I buy into, that we are the parts and parcels of Krishna, and we're here in the material world, and we're struggling hard with the six senses, which include the mind, you know, like that. But that's the picture of reality that I buy into. I think it's very reasonable. Now, here's a question. Here's an interesting point. Why is it that there's people who are aware, you know, there's people, because as I said, how you live your life is determined by what you believe is going to happen afterwards. So it's totally understandable that somebody thinks that when you die, that's the end of everything, is going to be like a gross materialist. And it's totally understandable if somebody's really a believer in the Christian idea that they're going to be a staunch Christian. But how is it that there's people who understand that, you know, about reincarnation, but they don't become devotees of Krishna? Because, you know, for instance, these two men, Jim Tucker and Ian Stevenson, did all this research on children remember past lives. Neither one of them took the next step, or whatever, how many steps it would be, they didn't, and become devotees of Krishna. Why? What to speak of them? There's so many. And during the time of Lord Chaitanya, there's all the impersonalists. You know, Prabhupada describes these impersonalists were not just, you know, they were serious people. These guys, you know, performed austerities. Prabhupada said they lived more austerely than the Vaishnavas. And, you know, their ambition, their goal was some sort of spiritual realization. Why is it that they couldn't make that step and become devotees of Krishna? What to speak of them? Let's take somebody even like a greater person, Hiranyakasipu. Hiranyakasipu, for all his demonic activity, and that's significant there, he was very learned. you know, in the Bhagavatam, he clearly understood about the immortality of the soul, right? He preached about it on the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. He preached to the other family relatives very brilliantly. I mean, if you read that part of the Bhagavatam without having first known that, you know, it was him, you'd never imagine is that Hiranyaksha. How's that possible? Well, the answer is this. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28. Krishna says, Yesham tvantakatam papam vinanam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajanti mam jada vritaha. And as Krishna explains, who can engage, who can take the devotional service? Because you could even have the knowledge that we're not the body, that we're spiritual beings and that we're in the cycle of birth and death. You can even understand that and still not be fortunate enough to take the devotional service. The translation for that verse is, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated and are free from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So in order to be able to engage in devotional service with determination, in order to be able to take to Krishna consciousness, you have to become free from the duality of delusion. You see? And in the purport, I'm going to read it, actually. It's only a couple of paragraphs. Prabhupada says, those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously and have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness. And here comes what I think is the key. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees. For in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. That's what has to happen. You've got to be delivered from the duality of delusion. And as Prabhupada says here, it's possible in the association of pure devotees. Next paragraph, it says, it is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2 that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees. So you've got to be in the association of pure devotees, and you have to render service to the devotees. And it says, but one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of material existence. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's law. Unless one is reinstated in his constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality or to be fully engaged in his transcendental loving service with determination. So here's another, another key sentence, is that it says here, the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. So those are the devotees. That's how you can tell. They're traversing the earth, preaching, and we should try to serve them. That's the understanding I come away with. You know, the plain practical application is this. You got to be thinking. You got to identify who are these people? Who are these devotees that Prabhupada's talking about here who are traversing the earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion? You have to identify who they are, seek them out, and serve them. And that's how you're going to become free from the, by their mercy, you're going to become free from the duality of delusion. Just the gyan itself is not enough. You know, the theoretical knowledge of how we're something more than just this body, how we're actually, you know, spiritual beings and we're going to, you got to take it to this level of serving the devotees. And by their mercy, we'll be free from the duality of illusion. We'll be able to engage in devotional service with determination. Now, relating to this, and this is, it is all related. Everything I've said is related to today's purport, and I'm just going to really kind of hone in on it. That, so you could say, well, okay, but we're doing that. I mean, a lot of us here. I mean, actually, I would agree. We are doing that. I mean, there's a lot of, looking around the room, I could see a lot of devotees here who are. Who are in that first category, there are the devotees who are traversing Here's a traverser right here, traversing the globe just to give people the conditioned souls, Krishna's knowledge. And there's a lot of devotees here in the category of serving those devotees who are doing that. But still, there's problems in our lives. There's suffering. There's, what's going on? There's reversals and unfortunate mishaps and things going wrong. Well, as Prabhupada explains here in the purport, it's kind of like that's it's the system. It's the nature of the beast. I'll give you an example. It's yesterday or the day before, I got a phone call from Parvat Muni. So he's in jail, and he called to tell me. We talk every couple, 2-3 days, and he called to tell me that he said, "Hey, they just told me today, I'm getting out a bit earlier. I'm getting out in December." I said, "Oh, that's great, And but the thing, and I was now just this morning, I was reflecting on that. Yeah, he's getting out in December, but in the meantime, he's just there. No, it's just he is going to get out in December. Okay, they've made that decision, but in the meantime, he's in the old man's jail, and he's in the same condition there, and he's serving the same crummy food, which he's lucky if he can offer to Krishna, find something to offer to Krishna, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, in other words, even though he's getting out, in the meantime, he's there. So, in the same way with devotees, where we're engaged in devotional service, we're doing everything right, but this is Krishna's, it's the system. It's the system that we're going to have to, according to our sentence. Each one of us has received a particular sentence. His body is like, and we're going to enjoy a certain amount of happiness, and we're going to suffer a certain amount of distress. And we have to just like Parvat Muni, he's just got to tolerate what's, the situation he's in until December, whatever it is, and then he gets out. So in the same way, like pointed out here, according to our past good and bad activities where, in a body, and it's got a certain amount of happiness and distress coming its way, and we just got to tolerate that, because we're getting out. We're in the system, but just like Parvat Muni, he knows he's getting out in December. So in the same way, if we just stick to exactly what we're doing, engaging in devotional service with determination, being one of those devotees that's traversing the earth and delivering everybody or serving one of them, then we're going to get out of the system. It's just a matter of time. And in the meantime, it's the way Krishna's arranged it, we'll experience certain things, according to the Kala or destiny. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Maharaj.
Thank you for a very nice class. Many wonderful points, a lot of insights, personal realizations, kind of things that we all need to hear, and which are like a stimulus for us to move forward in devotional service. I just have one question today and not a comment. And you've used the word pure devotee many times. Not once, not 10 times, but at least 50 upwards times. And we all have some idea of what that means because we read Prabhupada's books, and Srila Prabhupada has defined those words or certainly illustrated those words. So I would appreciate if you would, in terms of what Prabhupada means in this particular talk that you're giving, what does he mean when he speaks of a pure devotee? Okay, and what are the symptoms or the manifest expressions of a pure devotee? Because as you mentioned, we should take shelter of a pure devotee. We should associate with a pure devotee. So we should know what are those indications. What does he do which makes him pure? Okay, now it has a lot to do with inner. It's not only external, but there's a lot of inner stuff. How he feels, how he thinks, how he looks at the world, how he navigates through the world, how he interacts with other persons, as opposed to one who is not a pure devotee. Okay? Contrast and comparison is always a very good way of showing the difference between two opposite or two different situations. So I would appreciate if you would kindly, if you wish to, I don't want to put you on, if you wish to tell us what is a pure devotee. And I don't know, we're not talking about the pure devotee that Prabhupada says he's a new bhakta and he's doing everything that a really pure devotee does and he calls him a pure devotee. That there's a lack of maturity there. That's just activities, that's just ideas, but he's not really in the highest level of pure devotees. I want to move that out of the way and let's get to the real pure devotee that you were referring to in your talk. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's a big question, right?
Loaded.
But I'm going to give a small answer because it's already. But there's a place in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of a person whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? Essentially, what are the symptoms of a pure devotee? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks. For speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he does not speak, and certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks. But as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna-conscious man, let's assuming for argument's sake that that's probably means pure devotee there, a Krishna-conscious man, a pure devotee, is that he speaks only of Krishna and matters relating to him. Other symptoms then automatically follow as. And there are other symptoms, and there are a lot more that can be said on the subject. There's a lot more that can be said on this subject, obviously, but Prabhupada does seem to make this point here. The immediate symptom of a Krishna-conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and matters relating to him, and he does go on to say that other symptoms automatically follow, as stated below. So I know that doesn't really do justice to that big question, but it's the best I could do in this little time. So, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you. makes me more alert. Makes me more alert about this material.
Where's your foot?